Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Our next guest is going to talk about her journey from anonymous victim in a high-profile sexual assault case to outspoken advocate for assault survivors. In 2014, when Chessie Prout was a freshman at the elite St. Paul's boarding school in Concord, New Hampshire, she accused senior Owen LaBrie of sexually assaulting her. She said it was part of a campus ritual called Senior Salute, where senior boys would seek out encounters with younger students. The so-called St. Paul's rape trial captured national headlines. LaBrie was cleared of a felony rape charge, but he was convicted on 3 counts of misdemeanor charges, which she's appealing. During the trial, Prout's name was withheld, but she's since come forward, and she's co-written a memoir titled I Have the Right To, a high school survivor's story of sexual assault, justice, and hope. Chessie Prout, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Jen Abelson. She's a reporter for the Boston Globe Spotlight team, and she's co-author of the memoir. Jen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So how are you doing now, Chessie, 4 years later?
It's definitely been a process, a healing process of moving forward. And, I mean, right now, I am enjoying my gap year doing my job, which was writing this book. And working with Jen has been really great because she's helped me put my story together in a clear and concise way.
Why was it important for you to come forward?
For me, I mean, my name was already blasted on the darkest parts of the internet. Hate sites popped up with my name, my address, photos of my house, photos of my family, our phone numbers and emails. And people wrote death threats and rape threats online. And so I kind of wanted to reclaim the internet and reclaim my name and story by coming forward. And St. Paul's counterfiling to our lawsuit really helped push me over the edge to do that.
So we should just explain that a little bit. Your family filed a civil suit against St. Paul's, and they threatened to reveal your name. And
yes.
So that was why you decided to first come forward on the Today Show, right?
Yes, that is.
Yeah, and they did threaten to use your name. That, as a tactic in the lawsuit, I think people would be surprised by that.
Yes, absolutely. There are so many used and known and true, tried and true tactics that big institutions and perpetrators use to silence victims. And I wanted to try to change that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why this book now then, too? Why do this?
Well, over the last couple of years, I've been privileged to meet all these different survivors and advocates. And when I was still an anonymous victim, Charlie Pillsbury, another alumni from St. Paul's School, wrote an op-ed in the Hartford Courant, and he told his story of sexual assault at St. Paul's School, and this was maybe 60 years later. And so the fact that I could help somebody as an anonymous 15-year-old girl reconcile with their assault and kind of feel open enough to talk about it meant a lot to me. So I feel as though if I keep on talking about it, maybe that'll help other survivors come forward and come to terms with what's happened to them.
Do you ever regret coming forward? It sounds like it was such an ordeal.
Some days I do wish that I could just be, you know, a normal kid. But then again, what is normal these days? We've seen so many youth and kids become activists in so many different realms. And I feel really lucky to be able to have a voice in this arena because too often I felt helpless.
Right. Jen, I want to ask you about this and about your reporting for the Boston Globe Spotlight team. What have you found in terms of what's happening at some of the elite private schools in particular, like St. Paul's? We heard in the trial about that practice known as Senior Salute, where senior boys would try to have sexual encounters with young girls and compete with each other for numbers of sexual encounters. I mean, is this unique to St. Paul's, would you say, or is this sort of common among schools to have a sense of entitlement among many of the particularly young men there?
In 2016, I spent a year with my Spotlight team colleagues investigating sexual misconduct at private schools, and it was definitely, we journeyed into this world of privilege and elitism, and it was a very insular culture where there was a huge sense of entitlement and sexism, and that allowed not only horrific abuse of boys, but girls as well. And we found, we examined a lot of cases of faculty-to-student sexual misconduct, but also cases of student-to-student, and so I think Chessie's case is her own story, her own journey, but the idea of boys having sexual conquest games, unfortunately, is not unique to them.
And why do you think that is? I mean, is there some sort of entitlement in certain private elite schools, do you think, that is fostered more so than maybe other schools?
I think in particular in the boarding schools and some of the private schools that don't have a day students where there's it becomes a very insular culture and there's not an infusion of oxygen, it really allows administrators who are not paying close attention to the culture to promoting healthy relationships and consent to allow this kind of toxic culture to occur. But I will say it's not unique to just private schools. The sort of these problems of rape culture and sexual conquest games are you know, common, unfortunately, in both public and private schools.
In response to this book, St. Paul's released a statement to the Globe that said, "We're proud of the culture we've built at our school and our care for students. The school's culture does not condone or tolerate what happened to Chessie, and students understood senior salute to refer to a range of consensual behavior. It was never a tradition." Chessie, what do you say to that statement?
Well, I'd just kind of point to the proof and the actions. I mean, the senior salute was acknowledged as a tradition in a handbook, in a little red book done as an independent student project, which was sponsored by a teacher, and it was printed in the school's newspaper. And also, if everything's changed, then why was there another assault last summer? Why was there another sexual conquest game that was introduced last summer through an investigation by the Concord Monitor? And also, until they acknowledge that what happened to me was wrong and what happened to me was a part of a sick tradition at the school, I don't believe any change can really be done.
I want to ask you about social media, because you mentioned activism on the part of young people. So social media has obviously been an amazing tool for that activism. But I think you also, in your book, when you write about it, how it really was damaging in your particular case, and you talked about the threats on social media and the pictures of your house and all of those things. I wonder how you think it affected things, infected the environment at St. Paul's, and what happened to you. Is it harder now, in a way?
I'm not actually quite sure if it would be harder, because, I mean, the fundamental ideas of bullying and of shaming people, I mean, have stayed the same throughout the tale of time. But social media definitely has made it more widespread. You can't just go home and forget about the bullying that happens in the classroom halls or and especially in boarding schools. You're in a dorm, and that follows you everywhere. So social media has been an extremely harmful tool in some ways for kids to make jokes about the age of consent or about consent in general. But it's also been such a positive tool, at least for me, in launching the hashtag I Have the Right To movement, which is the title of the book, and to see the Me Too movement take off as well.
What would you say, both of you, to parents of young men about the Me Too movement and about how do they teach boys how to navigate consent and sex?
Well, I think it's also so important to remember that 1 in 6 boys before the age of 18 are going to be affected by sexual assault. And so this is a human issue, and we need to keep boys and men in the conversation, because also about 98% of perpetrators are male. And so talking about consent from a young age to all genders is so important, whether it be from kindergarten, where you talk about how you have to ask to hold somebody's hand or ask to give them a hug, or you don't have to give your uncle a kiss if you don't want to. That can help save children from a lifelong bit of trauma.
Hmm. Jen, what are your thoughts about that?
I agree with Chessie. I think the idea of including and engaging men and young boys in this conversation from an early age is imperative. Chessie, as you can see, is wearing this Consent Is bracelet on her hand, and that's mm-hmm. one of the tools that through an organization that she works with, promoting awareness, victim empowerment, which is just designed for people to claim what consent means to them and to not make it a topic that is anti-men or anti-boy, that it's supporting all people.
Hmm. Chessie, I wonder, are you still sometimes angry?
Oh, absolutely. That has been an important part in my healing process. A lot of times I've worked towards feeling or allowing myself to feel sad instead of angry, because, I mean, angry is my first defense mechanism, but I definitely am angered by a lot of different things that have been going on and continue to go on.
Hmm. I wonder if you could read a brief section from your book that we have in front of you. It's on page 157, and I just want to set it up a little bit. In this part of the book, you're speaking with a counselor at St. Paul's, and you're speaking about forgiveness. Can you read that for us?
Sure. This is part of chapter 11 called Numb. The idea that this rabbi or someone else could forgive Owen and set him free made my blood boil. He hadn't shown any remorse or acknowledged any responsibility for his actions. I don't think I'll ever forgive him, I declared. You might never forgive him, Buzz said, but have you forgiven yourself? I twirled that question around in my brain for a while. If I was truly honest, I still blamed myself for not screaming or kicking, for going there in the first place. But now, raw anger was displacing the shame. I was livid at Owen for doing this to me. I was enraged at my classmates for shunning me and calling me a liar. No one blames people who are beaten up and have their wallets stolen, but somehow my peers believed I was at fault for having my virginity stolen.
That's very powerful. Very powerful. What do you want people to take from this?
Well, through this book, I want to show the humanity behind the word victim and survivor. And again, show that we have the right to be angry, be sad, be happy, be anything we want to be throughout this process.
You sound like an advocate already. Are you an advocate?
I felt like a true survivor after finishing testifying in my trial in 2016. But I do believe that I've become a youth advocate or just an advocate in general because I choose to be that, and I choose to want to help other people, but you can be an advocate just by being kind to other people and helping promote consent education and just trying to be an everyday activist.
Hmm. Jen, and you, why co-write this book? Was there something personal for you as well?
I felt deeply connected to Chessie. I, you know, share many of the values she shares, which is integrity and truth and accountability, and I was just overwhelmed with her willingness and ability to stand up to such a prestigious institution at a young age and try to hold them accountable, which is something I've tried to do for my whole career. And this issue, I talked to hundreds of victims during my course of my investigation, many who suffered in silence for decades and seen how damaging it was, seen abuse, you know, toxic relationships, abuse of alcohol and drugs. And I felt like Chessie was this incredibly strong voice that could help shatter that silence, that could help people sort of better understand what it means to be a survivor or how to support them.
Hmm. Chessie, you said this was a bit of a gap year while you were writing this. What are you doing now? And you're working to be an advocate, I think,
yes.
Or you should be anyway. So what are you doing now?
My family and I recently relocated to Washington, D.C., where we started our own nonprofit called I Have the Right To. Oh. And so we want to use what we've learned through this process to help other families navigate the criminal justice system and their pursuit of justice. Hmm. And that's just the beginning of that. But I continued to work with PAVE throughout the fall and went into some high school classrooms, actually, to teach 10th grade health classes. And so we taught healthy relationship and consent courses. And it's always really interesting to see students excited to learn about this.
Hmm. All right. Well, so see, you are an advocate. Still in school?
I'm going to be starting college next year at Barnard.
All right. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Chessie Prout, the author of the new memoir, I Have the Right To, A High School Survivor's Story of Sexual Assault, Justice, and Hope. Also with us was Jen Abelson, a reporter for the Boston Globe Spotlight team and co-author of the memoir. Jen, thanks to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
That's our show for today and for this week. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.